allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call, please.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Here.
Mr. Elger? Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here. Okay, we have electronic participation this evening. Board member Dean Elger is not able to attend the meeting in person due to an employment-related obligation. In accordance with the District 41 policy, Mr. Elger notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting or like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Elger's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion.
Second. Okay, roll call.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Are you on mute?
Are you on? Dean?
Dean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask in the interest of time that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 committee should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper?
Mr. Cooper.
When trustworthiness is sideswiped by disingenuousness, trust is hard to be regained. Only in a repeat presentation and an exercise in Delphi technique, but call a community listening session. I call that being disingenuous. When we don't have a question and answer session at a community listening session, I call that being disingenuous. Dr. Gordon, you need awareness. There are stakeholders that haven't trusted this district since Ty Irwin was here. Please don't become another in a long line of superintendents that do not listen to the stakeholders. I have 6 questions and points about full-day kindergarten and your referendum that have been waiting to be answered. They would have been asked at the end of the last board meeting, but some of the board, including an incumbent, help to take away the ability for the public to speak. So I waited for the listening session, made a point about being able to ask questions at the beginning of it, and then was shut out of the process by you, Dr. Gordon. So we are going to have a recommendation tonight by Dr. Gordon without these questions being asked and answered, without knowing what all the costs will be, without any dialogue with these immediate neighbors of Spalding Park, whose home lives will be altered greatly, without any idea of what percentage of parents will say yes or no for whatever the cost of full-day kindergarten may end up being, without knowing what potential physical issues at Spalding, such as street widening, may turn up. Heck, how can you get answers to these deep questions when they can't be fit into the answer? I know how. You can make it a priority to listen first to your stakeholders and stop having these disingenuous and listening sessions. I'm not comfortable that you felt it was okay to ignore a stakeholder question. And I'm not comfortable that the board who were there were okay with this ignoring of this stakeholder. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Anyone else?
Bruce Curry.
I'd like to come back to Jenny and the work there. Have we fully evaluated level 3 for the success besides test scores? If not, when are we going to do that? What are the plans to address survey results? Concerns from teachers indicated that multi-age was not appropriate for second, third grade students. combine them. I don't know if a new survey has been put out to see if there's a comfort level for combining segment still, but I'd love to see a survey go forward with that. And then if the early childhood center is developed, this would eliminate the think tank plan for integrating kindergarten and first grade together. Are we abandoning that? Or have we determined which is the priority, multi-age or having kindergarten off on its own without being part of first grade? These are all concerns that I think we need to make a larger look and plan for. I guess my other indication, I stayed for the finance meeting, and I don't deny maybe Churchill needs these four classrooms. I would just like to see that enveloped in a larger plan, not making that decision until a larger decision on whether we would make something as Spalding or add additional classrooms to all the other classrooms goes forward. It's a $3.3 million decision that might be able to be integrated with the other decisions that I know are probably going to be coming up on the board's agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Katie Vogel.
My name is Katie Vogel. I'm a sixth grade student at Hadley. I'm speaking tonight to ask the board to approve the four additional classrooms at Churchill. I'm a former student, Churchill student, who liked being in portables for 2 years. I never liked them because first it was very cold in the winter and you had to get your coat and walk outside to go to the bathroom. Also, I didn't always feel safe because when we had to evacuate from severe weather, we had to walk outside to the main building and I was worried that I or someone else would get hurt. In addition, you could hear voices and other noises right through the thin portable classroom wall, which is very disturbing during tests or other quiet times. I attended the listening sessions about facilities, and I had some comments about the Phase 2 plan. I'm glad to hear that there are plans to fix hazards. One problem I've experienced at hazards is the pods. Since the pods are used as music classrooms, they're also used as an auditorium. Whenever there's an after-school activity there, that class is about 15 minutes early and we need to use a stand from the chair. I'm also not looking forward to going into the portable theater next year, since I already did that for 2 years at Churchill and I did not like it. At the listening session, I heard a lot of parents say that they were worried about putting their kindergartners on a bus to go to an early learning center. I went on a bus to kindergarten every single day, and I loved it. And I was even on the bus with kids from all grades. I thought it was really fun, and I met new friends that I wouldn't have met otherwise. I always felt safe on the bus, and I know kids and parents would get used to bus rides if they had a great early learning center.
Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your feelings with us.
Jennifer Malik.
Hi. Last week, a link to a petition was forwarded to the Board of Education. This petition was written in support of Dr. Burke's proposal to build an additional four classrooms at Churchill in order to eliminate the last portables. The petition was circulated throughout the Churchill and D41 community and has well over 200 signatures. I hope you've had a chance to review the petition and its comments. I wanted to read three of the comments for the public record. First, as a parent in the district, I ask, how can it be acceptable to leave Churchill students in portable trailers when the district has made it a priority to eliminate them at the other elementary schools? Students at Churchill should not be left as the only elementary students in the district to attend classes in outdoor portable classrooms, which lack bathrooms and do not provide the same level of safety as the regular school buildings in the event of inclement weather or potential emergencies. Eliminating the portable trailer classrooms at Churchill brings the school in line with the other elementary schools in the district and is a consistent and reasonable use of the surplus from Phase 1. Tying the elimination of the Churchill portable classrooms to a highly uncertain future referendum would result in these necessary classrooms being delayed or put off indefinitely. Second quote, the board should approve the expansion of Phase 1 in order to eliminate all portable classrooms at Churchill. The board has shown through this district project that it considers portable classrooms to be below the standards it has set for Glen Ellen Elementary Schools. Especially in light of the budget surplus, there is no justification for leaving Churchill, the school with the largest and most diverse student population, with these substandard facilities. That would send a poor message about the district's priorities and its commitment to providing all student segments with the best educational environment within the district's means. The third comment. Churchill deserves to stand out because of its amazing diversity and inspiring teachers. not because it is the only school in the district that requires its students to put on their coats to go to the bathroom or their next class. It would be unconscionable not to use the available funds to eliminate the portables and give our children the safe and proper learning environment they deserve. In closing, this is the board who took on the removal of the portables as an urgent priority, and with the administration figured out a way to do it. Your approval of Dr. Gordon's proposal is consistent with that priority. The portables are almost gone at the elementary schools, and we ask that you approve Dr. Gordon's proposal in order to finish the job without a fairness to Churchill's students, staff, and residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Kelly Hain, and I am the parent of two Churchill students, kindergarten and second grade, and a four-year-old. First and foremost, I want to share publicly and on the record that I wholeheartedly support the recommendation Dr. Gordon is making tonight to expand Phase 1 at Churchill to replace our second set of four portable classrooms and bring all our students under roof, just like the other three elementary schools. Additionally, I want to express my strong support of moving forward with offering full-day kindergarten within U41. Two things in a recent Washington Post article about full-day kindergarten struck me. One was the statistic that 77% of kindergartners across the nation in 2013 were in full-day programs. The other was a question posed by someone interviewed for the article where they asked, do all the other counties have it wrong? Because similar to D41, the community highlighted in the article was one of a few in the surrounding area to not have a full-day program. So I asked the school board and district residents, should we choose not to move forward with finding a viable option for full-day kindergarten? Are we saying all the other districts surrounding us and a large portion of our nation have gotten it wrong and full-day kindergarten is not important? I fully recognize and appreciate the complexities associated with being able to fit full-day kindergarten into D41, both with regard to space and budget, but I firmly believe the right next step is to formally make it a priority and figure out how to make it happen. Full day is not just a want, but a need in order for D41 to remain educationally competitive and continue to attract young families. The Chicagoland area provides a lot of great suburbs with great schools. If D41 chooses not to move forward with full day kindergarten, it will not take long for families to look past Glen Ellen and specifically D41 when suburb shopping. A quaint, walkable community with a cute downtown, students does not sell homes alone. Great schools sell homes. And the lack of full-day kindergarten will eventually have a negative impact on our property values, whether it be 1, 3, or 5 years down the road. Full-day kindergarten is also the right thing to do for our young students. Whether we like it or not, what is expected of our kindergartners is vastly different than when we were kindergartners or just 5 years ago. Saying no to full-day kindergarten is not going to change what is expected of our students, but instead just require the teachers to cram all the necessary curriculum into the very short half-day. I also thought about if full day would have made a difference for my kiddos. Honestly, my gut reaction was no, but then I realized I really created my own modified full day program by paying for 3 or 4 days of enrichment because I did not think the half day program prepared them for the realities of first grade and also wanted to expose them to the other subjects like science and social studies that are often forgone in the short half day. The full day option would allow for more small group instruction and the necessary time for differentiation needed to meet kids where they are academically. So I think a full-day option would have made a difference for my kiddos. The answer is absolutely yes, and firmly believe the same would be true for most students. As a district parent and taxpayer, you have my support to do everything I can to encourage others to support making full-day kindergarten a reality for current and future families in our district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Yep. Okay, terrific. Presentations, reports, updates, and initiatives. Ms. Taylor, PTA Executive Council report, please.
But the council met today, and I think one of the biggest things that council is doing that we want to talk about is the school and community safety fair, which is scheduled for March 7th. Staff and the team have an update for that. This is an opportunity for PTA and District 41 and the community to work together to do a safety fair for everyone. Some of the subjects will have vendors there, self-assistance, fire, safety, first aid, an informal conversation with Dean Homer, as well as the Beacon Policy Officer.
grounds director, our own David Sivanars. But anyway, there's also things we're going to have child psychologists to talk about, injuries for concussions, as well as hazard counselors to discuss the transition for kids who are in middle school. And I could go on and on, okay? So, but anyway, I think that's something that we want to highlight that's coming up to the calendar early so that you can plan to be there. That is something that the council is doing. Our own consistency and Susan Lang are the directors who are spearheading that. So I really want to do something to let people know about that. All of our schools, we're working on a lot of science. We had Science Day at Abraham Lincoln. Lamont was our high interest day. We had a lot of participation as well as we had trials going to state for Reflections, which is a PTA arts program. So we have a child who is moving forward to state, which is something we should all be proud of. Ben Franklin is working on the Mosaic Tile for fundraiser. So that's their biggest project. Churchill brought drama to their school. So this will be the first time in a very long time they're doing the Jungle Book. So that's on your calendar. I do not have the date. We also
February 27th.
That's right. And then they also have father-daughter bands with 280 fathers and daughters. So again, this is something that we're reaching out to our community, she's bringing them, and they're embracing that. Let's see, Forest Glen had a science alliance, and then they had the science fair. Again, science is happening. And as well as they also working on their drama program. We are also working on, along with the leaders and voters, for a candidate forum on March 14th. For anybody that has questions, that would be Liz Vogel, who's our vice president, along with our legislative chair, is managing that for us. And we started nominating for next year, so we're planning for next year. Thank you. And biggest thing, Hadley, that's coming up, is having BAM. I think I spoke about BAM last time, but we are having BAM, which last year for CAL, which is how we're up to date. And this year is BAM, becoming a Making Men, where it's our opportunity for our men, along with students, for men in their lives, their dads, uncles, their children, to come in, have speakers, and really embrace being young men and growing into responsible. So, let's see, and that is on February 21st, right, in the morning. So, if you have a child or you don't study, please be first.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, full day kindergarten. Karen will provide the presentation.
So Karen will be giving us a presentation on full day kindergarten, some of its implications, what it looks like in the future. But I think, you know, Mrs. Hain outlined it beautifully. But we do believe in full-day kindergarten from administration. We'll get into our recommendation a little bit later. But Karen will give us a kind of an overall view of what full-day kindergarten could look like and its impact. You're still challenged. It's going.
With you kind of what districts in our area, DuPage County, some of the other local counties, we're offering for full day versus half day kindergarten. And this though shows you kind of more from a nationwide perspective, going back all the way back to 1977 through 2013. So that the top line there is 72.5, hopefully. The 72.5 was the half-day program, and then only, which I was actually surprised to see, there were 27.5% of kids who attended full-day kindergarten back in 1977. And then you can see over time where it's, you know, kind of flipped. And 77.1% of kids back in 2013 were attending a full-day kindergarten program, compared to 22.9% this half-day. And then the next slide. This just kind of shows you more by state the different kind of percentages. So that if you can see Illinois up there, that color of green, 70 to 79% of students in Illinois attend a full-day kindergarten program. So that dark blue is 90% or above. That other deeper green is 80 to 89%. That lionish color is 60 to 69, and that below 60%. But when you look at that way, at that kind of picture, really, you know, close to three-fourths of a nation is living more in a world of full-day kindergarten as opposed to half-day kindergarten. You've got the western states where below 60% of their kids are in that. So that just kind of gives you an idea, even within Illinois, the entire state, kind of where the number of kids who are getting this 80% of the kids in Illinois are attending full day. This was like my first bullet, so I don't know how it ended up back here. So I chose this really kind of for that word developmentally appropriate. We've heard from kindergarten teachers to, due to the rigor of the Common Core, we have really kind of stepped things off, and our teachers have done a great job of responding, but given that, I would tell you they feel like they've lost some of that developmentally appropriateness because we've only got so much time, and we're going to move kind of from one thing to another. So, this probably isn't anything new. We've heard this before. This comes from the National Association of School Psychologists. But these are some of the advantages that they've identified for full-day kindergarten. Most of those would be kind of no surprise to you. That the greater creativity, and I think it's more the time for creativity, would be a piece of that. And then that more relaxed, less hurried school day, which is kind of what I alluded to. And that's just kind of the research that they have pulled together. So we know that there's academic benefits and social emotional benefits, and I just kind of highlighted a couple of things in both literacy and math. And if you look at the literacy side there, oral language development, I mean, obviously that's key, and preschools do a lot of that, and kindergarten puts that in as part of the workshop, but they would love to be able to spend more time with that. One of the things we've noticed over time is that our kids don't really come knowing those nursery rhymes anymore, kind of that playing with language and the rhyming. Kids do, but a lot of that has kind of fallen to the wayside. That oral language development really works on that, that playing with language, which then leads to that vocabulary development. There's a significant difference in the number of vocabulary words that was kids come to kindergarten with as opposed to typically developing kids. So that oral language development kind of supports further increased vocabulary development. And I put here, too, that greater focus on writing. We have an expectation that we want our kindergartners to leave kindergarten reading at a level D. And we have a couple kindergarten teachers in here. And when I first started in this district close to 9 years ago, we were kind of, when we rolled out balanced literacy, we said we're going to get into a B, and the kindergarten teachers were like, there's no way we're going to get up to a B. Now we say we're getting into a D, and you know, they're doing everything they possibly can to get as many kids to that level. But as a result, we fit writing in, but we love to have that true writer's workshop where we can have that balanced amount of time on both reading and writing. And that would have payoffs at grade levels beyond that as well. And then in both math and literacy, that increased opportunity for small groups and conferences with kids. To be able to get to every small group on a daily basis would be a great thing. And they try. They always see the kids who are struggling every day, but to fit that all in. And then in math, obviously we use math manipulatives now, but really that kind of total immersion with those manipulatives, and it really kind of connects to kind of those math practices and problem solving. And I know it's hard to imagine like what would problem solving look like at kindergarten, but we do problem solving. And to have that time, I mean, they've got about a 30-minute block. 30 minutes is not a lot to be able to even get to some of those small groups that we do a mini lesson. Obviously, our kindergartners come in very divert. But to be able to give kids kind of that little challenging problem and allow them in that time to kind of struggle mathematically with some of those concepts and persevere. And as you go along in the grade levels, it will tell you that's one of the mathematical practices that our kids tend to kind of shy away from. And we haven't been able to give them that time to really struggle with that, use those things in math. I put back fluency in kindergarten. It doesn't sound like a lot, but kids need to be able to add and subtract through 5. And as I said, that doesn't seem like that, you know, that high. However, they need to do it without manipulative. They need to know that, and by manipulative, I'm including fingers, that, you know, 2 plus 2 is 2, 4 plus 1 is 5. Did I say 2 plus 2 is 2? Hopefully those are better. 2 plus 2 is 1. That comes quickly for them. So that fact fluency piece would be important as well. And again, that small group and the concept. So just some of the additional benefits, and obviously I put time in capital letters because they love to have some of that kind of reading time, and even as they transition, that inquiry, that hands-on learning, that exploration. The next generation science standards, they did have one new unit this year, and they kind of had that conversation. What do we let go to be able to get in some of that science time for that new unit? Increased opportunity for the workshop implementation, that getting to those small groups. I put the fine motor on here, and I think Paul referenced it earlier. And it is about handwriting, but we've seen over time kids come in struggling with pencil graphs, letter formation and that. And we've seen kind of things have gone away from kids just spending time coloring, cutting, those kinds of things. Part of that, I think, is technology. We see that, you know, I have 3 grandkids, and, you know, they can use that iPad, those iPhones, and our kids spend a lot of time on that, and I don't know that we're handing them those coloring books and just paper and things like that. So to be able to kind of bring that back and actually spend a lot of time, because the teachers always say, how do I fit in handwriting? And we hear this at all grade levels, but it's needed at kindergarten. And then I put creativity in here. And I was glad to hear Churchill was talking a little bit about bringing that back, but that whole creative dramatics, I didn't use the word play. That is a part of play, but play sounds very unstructured, and we want to kind of give that some thought of what that would look like. But that is really a part of that, and that whole arts exploration that would occur during that, which is those opportunities to use their imagination to become more creative. Reducing interventions. And I did put problem-based learning. Our kindergarten teachers are all kind of in the process of doing their first PBL. I actually was at Churchill. The kids were super cute. They did a great job with it. And it's really getting into listening, speaking, building that self-confidence, a little collaboration. I'll be at Churchill later this week. But to really give that the time without feeling like I had to sacrifice something else to do that. So probably more time for that. And then I would consider beginning class at kindergarten because that would be part of the study that we would want to do. Start the first grade. We know the earlier you start the language, the better, but there's other considerations to make with that as well. And then I have a few quotes here from some of our kindergarten teachers, and I will let you read those. And, you know, the teachers would love time for science, and our kids love that time for science because their nature is to be very curious and wants to do that type of learning with, and they love the science topics as well. And then, just in closing, so what I've done is really just kind of highlighted those benefits. Not so much what is that exact day going to look like, and part of that is really those next steps. Because if the board recommends, we should look at full-day kindergarten. That's the opportunity to bring a group of new teachers, both early childhood, kindergarten, and first grade, to come together, as well as parents from each of our elementary buildings, to really kind of further study, do some site visits, talk to people. We're going to have to continue to offer half-day. So what does that look like for those kids who are there for only a half-day versus a full-day program? What would that schedule look like as it's kind of developed out? Obviously, with some of those things on that list, you would be embedding that in there, but I would want to tell you today, this is what a full-day kindergarten program is going to look like until we can have everybody at the table to further this.
Board, any questions for Karen? It does, I mean, obviously connect with the recommendation a little bit later, so questions here?
Karen, does your group gathering to define kindergarten eventually, do you think that it will be impacted by if you have an EC space or a K-5 space?
No. I mean,
or an expanded school space.
Right. I mean, in some respects, what you get when you build all new kindergarten rooms is you would design the space with our small people in mind, where when you take existing space and you convert it, for example, some of the classrooms I know, like at Fourth Glen, their rooms are smaller than the other kindergarten classrooms, so they don't have a lot of that kind of more open space, more space for kids to kind of do some of those things. They don't have classrooms in them. I mean, I don't know that even in the EC kindergarten center, you could do those what they call like game style bathrooms where they're kind of clustered and it's more open where you have that line of sight. But, so you would kind of be intentional with some of those things.
But the programming of it?
But programming, it would not look, I don't think it would look different either way.
Can you explain that in the light of the comment? I thought I heard you say that you would bring the pre-K, the kindergarten, and the first grade teachers together if we did an early childhood center. Is that just in terms of
the childhood center, to talk about full-day kindergarten, like what that would look like. Because you want to know kind of from where they're coming from, and gives your early childhood pre-K teachers an understanding of then what's going to be happening at kindergarten. And first grade teachers kind of talk about, this is our expectation. And based on what our standards are, where we want to see our kindergarten.
So it's more about the group doing the design than the actual implementation.
Right, it's not about that particular center.
Karen, can you talk about the impact, if there is any, with our dual language program?
Dual language, currently, I mean, it's in a half-day program. And we've got the 50-50 model, and Christy is actually here. So within the half-day program, half of the half-day is in English, and the other half is in Spanish. So what you do is you kind of take the philosophy that we use at first grade, where half of their day is in Spanish, half of a full day, and the other half is in English. We would begin that open at. And so they're, like, at first grade, they've got a Spanish-speaking teacher who teaches half the day, and then a native English speaker who teaches the other half of the day. Right now, Christy does both at the kindergarten level. Moving forward, she's the Spanish-speaking teacher, so she would continue that. Then you have like a native English speaker. So it would look like that first grade model.
At kindergarten.
Still the 50-50.
Yeah. I have some other stuff that it can be during discussion, but not with Karen, just general.
Okay.
Anybody else? I got a couple questions. If you, when you look at the 77% versus the 27%, is there any logic to why the 27% haven't jumped in? I mean, is there any common theme that you're aware of? I don't know if that graph came from a study that was done and a rationale for it. Or
No, I don't know.
Okay. I don't want to guess about it. I just didn't know if that graph came from a study and the study said here's why people are doing it versus people not doing it.
You know, and I guess just some of the districts I know in Illinois, I mean, the district is like a really large district in that, and there's, you know, that district, there's no way they could financially support a full-day kindergarten or have the space for it, kind of given some of those constraints, but they offer it to the most at-risk kids. My guess is there's probably a similar struggle. It's usually financial space, but...
Can I have a follow-up question on
your
question? On that data, is that when you see that they're offering full-day kindergarten, the fact that they offer it to at-risk kids only, perhaps, does it show up on, I think it was blue?
That was my next question.
Oh, was it your next question? Sorry.
I'm going to go back to that. With that, it shows the number. The one was based on census data, and that was the number of kids actually attending.
Okay. So that's a better number than programs.
Right.
Okay. Well,
that's a full-day program, but it could be privately sponsored.
Absolutely. I mean, and because I was kind of thinking, too, even back to, like, 1977, I didn't even know there was a full-day program. And I'm thinking it could have been kids who were, like, in a daycare slash kindergarten program, like at your kindergartners or whatever, that those parents would have checked. They're in a full-day program. I don't really know, but it came from the number of kids participating.
I don't know why I kept this. It was probably because I knew I was going to have this conversation 6 years later. But the one of the first journals that we got when I started on the board, and it was in 2008, the cover article, and I brought this at our listening sessions to kind of share with people just in terms of it being going on, was this journal. It says it's this conversation about half-day, full-day, so this is back in 2008. But maybe some of what you're talking about, and these are statistics, you know, are from that era. But they talked about in 2004 and 2005, there were 146,000 kindergartners in the state. 55% of those were in full day, 45%. But then by 2006-07, so just two academic years later, the number went up to 57% in full day programs. And then they did look at, John, this was your question, which I thought was kind of interesting. So where are these kids? You know, they asked the question. What they said is, at the time at least, the majority of schools with half-day programs are found in Chicago, Cook County, and its surrounding collar counties, DuPage, Kane, Kendall. So half-day programs in this area. Pockets of half-day programs are found in at least 10 other counties. But for the most part, downstate school boards have made the decision for all-day programs. And part of that is predicated on the size, how disparate, you know, the size is. I mean, like, it's, we talk about how there's two kind of school district setups in the state, you know, south of I-80 and north. And so what they talked about, at least in this article at this time, was the decision to do that in order to provide some child care opportunities for downstaters and also just classroom rigor, because they were able to was more financially sound to do it there. So that's some of it. And then I don't know that that holds true. I tried to do a search on this in the last couple of days, and there isn't specific data that talks about that. But it's a baseline, I think, for what we're talking about, that there tends to be more options around our area for half-day programs and for parents to make more of a choice if you have a full-time parent at home to be able to say, for that age group, I want to have just a half-a-day program. So... but I thought it was telling that, you know, it's kind of split in terms of our state. And even way back then, you know, 57% were in a full-day program at some point in the state. So.
Hey, Dean, I don't want to forget about you. Do you have any questions with regards to the presentation before we continue our questions?
Yes, I did. I was wondering, you know, we talked, as we've looked at this over the past few months, we talk about the effects that this can have in a positive way. Has there been any news studies or anything like that in a negative way of taking the kids from a half day to a full day?
Not that I've seen. I mean, one news study came out which says it's a little bit more positive. We have just looked at that data, but not from any negative impact. one thing that I had mentioned to Paul, too, is some of that early research said we didn't see those gains kind of over time and that, but a lot of that was kind of pre-Common Core. So now it'll be interesting as we watch the data as our kids who are in full-day kindergarten now that they've been implementing the Common Core, if we see some kind of more long-term academic benefits.
So, Dean, I don't know if you could hear that, but it was, no, there has not been any negative consequences.
Okay. Yeah, I did. Thank you.
Anything else from your end?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
But can I add to what Karen just asked, on what you just stated, though? But in that study that was just sent around, there was probably something more significant found by the researcher, and it's the fact that the comparative data, you know, he had to go to random sampling because of the fade-out issue that's been out there, and we read, and Paul gave us, you gave us that data back in October or
so. Been a while.
The research that showed the fade-out by third, fourth grade was that the people who were in the full-day kindergarten tended to be lower economic students, so the comparison was when you then take a student that doesn't fall into that subgroup by fourth grade and you're comparing this student that was an at-risk student perhaps, and you saw the fade out when you're comparing, you know, something that wasn't necessarily comparable in the kindergarten level. Mm-hmm. And I think that was an important point, point to that study. And part of the problem is we have to, if we're going to look at this research, obviously, we need to be making sure it's T significant, that you're comparing apples and apples. I mean, that's what I read from that study. I mean, I'd like to see some more studies where hopefully people have gone through that data and are doing a better comparison. Otherwise,
I keep searching every day.
I'm
I keep sending
thanks,
it and keep searching.
For the last
one.
John.
Yes.
Question. At some point before we make a decision on this, will we have any kind of estimate on the cost to a family that wants to have their child attend full day kindergarten?
That's a board decision if the board chooses to make it
I mean,
a choice.
What do we look at the operating cost right now divided by
what we've seen? And I think what we reported is about $4,000 is what we see from other districts who charge for full day kindergarten for families, not the families who are receiving free or reduced.
Okay.
You're welcome.
You know, to that research, I'm looking for my notes from that meeting. I think at least what I concluded from it is, and I don't know if it's, you know, Karen, if you feel this has changed, and I can't find my notes, but I think what I concluded from all the studies was that probably around third grade is where those that had full day and those that didn't, the other kids caught up, so it seemed like long term the effect wasn't there. Seemed like it definitely had a more of an impact on the lower economic children. Sounds like there was consensus though that social emotionally it was an improvement. That's what I remember from what we read in terms of, you know, vocabulary, hearing words, sounds, and things like that. But that academically, which there's a social-emotional piece, and then there's the academic piece. Academically, it seemed like third grade was sort of the time when it all equaled out, whether you did full day or not.
And I think that's what Joe was referring to in this new study that I put out that, forgetting her last name, Gibbs, I think it's Shiloh Gibbs, put out as saying, when you start looking at that data a little bit further, those who are attending full-day kindergarten seem to generally be from more at risk, and so you weren't comparing apples to apples when you're looking across the board. So it was interesting when you look at students random, and what she was able to do, I believe it is a woman, is when you look at a random sampling of students who go to it, you do see a continuation of academic growth over time for kids.
So like all research there.
Yep. There's no definitive piece to it, and I think it goes to what Kelly said. I mean, is everybody else wrong? I mean, there is a perception throughout that this is the right thing to be doing for our kids. That was the recommendation I brought forward within our phase one, phase two planning, that full day kindergarten. And again, I believe full day kindergarten is going to come to District 41 at some point, at some time. And I would just recommend it being now rather than, and when I say now, that 2017-2018 school year would be the soonest that we could do it.
I'm sorry, you have another question?
No, go ahead and do
it. And I was just curious, when you look at the percentages of those that have full day and those that don't, it was surprising to me that, you know, states like Alabama and Louisiana and Missouri have 90% or greater, but they, you know, they seem to be the states we always hear about that are having the biggest problems in terms of, you know, their education. And then California below 60%, which seems to be doing a good job. Again, I don't know if this is from an article that, you know, talked about the pros and cons of each of these, and if you have any insight into that. Or
yeah, I mean,
Okay. John, you made me think of a couple things, and this is, I'm trying to bring this back to District 41 when we think about it. And Karen, your list of kind of the enrichment things, or the, you know, additional things that our kindergarten teachers have talked about, our options, that there, one thing struck me, which is, you know, you said when a child needs extra help, you know, they're going to receive that. So there's this, use the term struggling child, and we know that we have, and every school district has a population, will always have a population of children who are going to struggle. And I always feel like, you know, when we talk about they kind of get to a point where they meet each other, all of us have probably had a situation with one of our children where we feel like they struggled in a subject, and then by, you know, it could be middle school, it could be into high school, all of a sudden it all clicked, right? And they're at that level too. But what it makes me think about is, if we're in a situation now where we have a 2.5 hour day, and, you know, we said that Marquardt was the other district right now that's still not, they're talking about it, actually, it was in the, mm-hmm. in the newspaper with dual language, too. But on Mondays, they have an early dismissal like District 87 does for PLC time. So their half-day kindergarten program is 8:50 to 11:15 on Mondays, which is 2 hours and 25 minutes like ours. And then Tuesday through Friday, they go 8:50 to 11:40, so they have another, like, 25 minutes added to the day over those 4 days. Even that, I think, probably would see makes a difference. But this idea that, you know, we refer to District 200, they're our neighbor district, you know, 89 just went full day. But even in District 200, they started out, I went and looked at their minutes, because in February of 2011, they started the conversation in terms of the kindergarten program. Earlier that year in January, February, they took the vote to essentially get it into a certain number of schools. They had 9 sections that they piloted. But by October, when it came back after the summer break and they were into full board meeting sessions, their comment on board reports was from the superintendent, the all-day kindergarten program has a current enrollment of 194 students, so they had 9 sections because that's what they could fit into their buildings. And informal feedback said the adjustment has gone well. Teachers are thrilled to have the kids all day. And staff will be monitoring, and this is a cost-neutral program. So back to, is there a cost to it? They decided to make it cost-neutral, not taking anything out of the budget other than for their low-income students. But it seems to me if we're thinking about this to do what one of the District 200 administrators said when I called her to talk about this, it was, our teachers were saying, can we slow the day down for the students? And they didn't mean by then not doing as much, but to have more time in it. But that was the language that she used. And so if we're talking about, like John, you're bringing up, which I think is a good point, this idea of how do we, you know, get our kids leveled, that the children who are coming in with some more disadvantage, where my question is always, where might they be if we had that extra time? Might they be reading at a higher level sooner? Might the kids who are showing that they need enrichment have more time in that day to have that enrichment? So they're moving beyond their Fontes and Pinnell of D into an F or a G or whatever. So I think it's looking holistically at what our population is, and that we have some of all of those kids, and we're always going to have some of all of those kids. So how does, for me the rhetorical question is, how does a full day advantage all the children knowing what our teachers are telling us right now? So
closing that achievement gap earlier.
Earlier, right.
So the District 200 is interesting, because I thought only like 50% of the people opted into full-day kindergarten. But it sounds like what you're saying is they only had space for nine.
They had nine sections originally in 2011. But now they're in all 13 schools, all 13 of their elementaries.
And do we know if their penetration has been greater than 50% for...
Yes.
Yeah,
it has. I mean, that came, to your point, John, over time. That's why they started like... with the nine sections to see who would opt in, because there's so many choices in the area, you know, which parents would want to take on. But eventually, you know, all of the schools have a half day, but, you know, an all day option too. So.
Any other questions with regards to the presentation? I know we'll be discussing this afterwards. But
you think?
Huh?
I think we've done a good job.
Yeah. All
right. Thank you.
Join the next one.
Much shorter.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, discussion items, Churchill Editions, cost review. Bob and Paul will introduce the discussion.
So Bob will be bringing, he had it tonight at the Finance Committee regarding the Churchill Editions for four more classrooms. We believe within either the K-5 or the Early Learning Center, that adding these classrooms is a necessity. It fits within how we use our space that we showed to the board 4 weeks ago now. We believe these classrooms are needed, and it's the right thing to do now. And I'll hand it to Bob, but you will also be hearing from Jack and Ron as well on this issue.
Okay, so as Paul mentioned earlier, we had this presentation at the Finance Committee, and what we've done is we've gone through and we've identified the cost associated with a possible additional four-classroom addition to Churchill. I've broken high and low values and construction costs with contingencies. Are estimated at between $2.5 and $2.8 million. We considered our soft cost of furniture, fixtures, and equipment. It's $60,000 for those classrooms, technology approximately $150,000, and architectural services between $219,000 and $240,000 for a total soft cost of between $428,000 and $450,000. Then we also wanted to be inclusive of other costs that we've incurred with regards to the additions that we're currently putting in. Permits are estimated at approximately $10,000. We're talking, as part of this process, we're also going to need to remove the existing portables that are currently located in the parking lot of Churchill. That's an approximate cost of about $100,000, and then we have miscellaneous cost of between $10,000 and $25,000. For total cost of between $3,048,000 and $3,385,000. And then attached to your board report this evening, there's a recommendation there in terms of how we'll fund these proposed additions. And our recommendation is, we currently have approximately $1.2 million outstanding in allowances from the existing or ongoing capital projects additions. So we would recommend using that $1.2 million. I presented the board with a preliminary budget for 2015-16 at the last meeting. Inclusive of that budget was $1 million in capital projects for next year. We're suggesting maintaining $50,000 in expenditures for those capital projects, and the other $500,000 from the capital projects that were initially brought to the board, and $500,000 to be taken from that pool and incorporated in this addition or in this proposed addition. And then finally, we're talking about the use of approximately $1.5 million in existing fund balances to be used to complete these projects. Any additional funding I would need to account for during the 15-16 budget process in terms of operating funds, where I would pull additional funding from to be able to complete these additions. So this is up for, we had a conversation at the Finance Committee. were up for discussion this evening, and this is due to come before the board for action at the February 23rd meeting. Any questions that I can answer?
Can you just clarify, are you saying next year's capital spend of $1 million, you're going to take $500,000 of that and put it to this, therefore next year's capital budget will be for $500,000?
About $500,000, yes. Okay.
I haven't looked at the past, you know, enough to be typically have more requests than $500,000 for capital improvements every year.
Oh, I could go on and on.
Would it be deferring those?
It would be deferring some maintenance items. And one of the items that we've had sort of at the top of our list for the past couple of years are roofs. So, yes, we are going to need to start taking a look at roofs in the near future. Mm-hmm. We don't have any ongoing or existing problems currently with our roofs, but I'd rather be proactive than have something catastrophic happen.
Yeah, you heard me thinking. The next question. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We do, you know, I spend $50,000 a year on ongoing repairs for the roofs, between $25,000 and $50,000, so we maintain them in a well shape. That's one of the good things that we've been able to do and have been able to afford. So that's probably why we've got the life out of them that we have.
What does this do to the fund balance then?
Well, that's something that Paul and I discussed. We've shared a spreadsheet that we're looking at. For
this would be about you would have about $9.5 million left mm-hmm. after you use the $1.5, which would put you around
15,
yeah, about 16% of overall fund balance. You have a board policy that puts you around, you can't go below 10%.
At the base,
and then you have a high of 25% within your policies.
Hey, Dean, I don't want to forget about you. You have any questions?
Maybe a statement, but it could be a question of Bob, and that's that it's your opinion then from this presentation that if we went forward with the four classrooms, we'd be able to do it without having to get sources of revenue outside of what we already have.
That's correct.
Okay.
Sounds like we're dipping into our capital expenditure for next year and then our reserves and then the positive variance on the construction that we're doing now.
That's correct.
So can I ask a question about that? We have allowances that are at $1.2 million, and my question in looking through this is, are there any, and maybe this goes to Jack, in looking at what we have going on with Forest Glen and Churchill moving forward, what impact might we have that might have to use some of those dollars, if at all?
Right. Well, and that's really a good question, because I don't know if you have the spreadsheet that I passed out a couple of weeks ago that had that $1.2 million in it. Anyways, I didn't bring it with me tonight, but one of the things that 1.2 includes is that exact thing, which is the contingency money that's still in the budget for Forest Glen and Churchill. So we're going a little bit here, from my standpoint, we're taking a little bit of a risk because we're not done with Forest Glen or Churchill. But the fortunate part is we're deep enough into those projects that we have the structure up at Forest Glen, the foundations and underground, and all of the earthwork and grading done at Churchill. Mm-hmm. So now it's all about finishing the projects. Based on the results of our work at Franklin and Lincoln, we feel comfortable recommending, because we still have retained some allowance money outside of that 1.2.
Yeah, that was the other question. I know we talked about that. So I'm not using the right terminology, but the really potentially risky parts of the building process are basically done.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
So otherwise, really, I know you wouldn't have recommended this.
No, really, because what you're doing is you're spending the contingency that we haven't used for the construction to date. That's really what you're spending. Mm-hmm. And the escalation portion of the money that was set aside that was never needed because the bidding process was pulled forward.
Right.
So the combination of the contingency money that you never needed to use, the escalation is probably about $900,000 of that 1.2.
Right.
So it's
well, plus we have the reserves if we get into any trouble. Anyway, so.
Yes.
But it sounds like we're going to need both and. in terms of your budget, Bob. We'll need the contingency, this $500,000 out of our, you know, capital, and then that fund balance, that 1.5 out of our fund balance.
I know they're just estimates at this time.
Right, right, right. But I feel like, you know, with the, when the board worked through the policy a few years ago about fund balance, then we had that like, min-max. I know we went over 100,000 discussions around that. This, to me, is one of the reasons that we have that, so that should we need those dollars, we can still feel confident based on what we agreed to that that fund reserve is still going to be safe. And I'm looking to finance committee members for part of that. I think, John, you are in finance.
And that conversation was also around providing future boards flexibility.
Flexibility, exactly.
Like
yeah. So I'm just trying to, I want to wrap that around, because I just want it to be on record that these dollars, you know, are tied back to conversations that were pretty deep about being able to make a good decision around that. And should we be in a position to have to use that, it would still provide us that cushion, you know, to have the money in reserves that we might need for.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons we had such a widespread of 10 to 25% is that we had some board members that wanted 25 and some wanted 10. So we put a range, right, to say, okay, we won't go below this, but if we go above this, something has to be done, right?
Right, right. But the going below was also the concern, too. And, I mean, Bob, I know you weighed in on that quite strongly to say, look, this is our operating budget. This is what, you know, this is a need to have at least, this 10%.
To your point, the reason that we were able to have this discussion a year and a half ago was because we went over the 25%, right? So that forced the discussion of
what we do with it.
So.
Thank you.
Could you speak to the contingency line up here? Is that the same percent that we set aside in the other parts of phase one?
Yeah. Right. Can you repeat that again?
Question, Catherine.
The contingency line here that you're projecting, what percent of that is contingency? And is that similar to the percent that you would have used in phase one?
Right now, in that 2.5 to 2.8, we're carrying around a 10% contingency because we don't have any drawings. The thing that this conversation is missing is that we've qualified all of this with the fact that we haven't done design, we haven't gone to the village, we don't have permanent drawings. So we have to give a broad range, and we have to use a high contingency because we're just using napkin sketches right now.
Okay.
But we built these four classroom pods four times, so we know generally what we're going to be doing, so we can feel confident in the numbers. So to answer your question specifically, that's got a 10% contingency in it. When we went to construction and went out to bid with the current project, we had lowered that contingency, I believe, to 5%, if my memory serves me correctly, because we had full documents, and we knew what we were going to be doing.
Okay. I don't know enough really to ask this question, but I think you can help us. I know in past projects, soil samples have revealed things that have eaten up contingency. So is this a potential issue with soil samples that you haven't taken yet, or have you taken them because you've been building the site, or where?
We have the benefit of having had soil borings for the site.
Okay.
We have the benefit of site detention already anticipating that Churchill would be larger than when we built it.
It's designed to receive this addition.
So the stormwater, the underground stormwater detention system, the district made the investment, as they did previously at Franklin, when work was done there previously. When we did the work this last year on Franklin, we didn't have to extend the underground detention at Franklin because the district had anticipated.
Okay.
So there's been some investments that have been made,
okay,
and so some of the risk has been taken out of the project.
Okay, great.
Kathy, just to give you another example, we did the parking out here in Hadley a couple of years ago, and we overbuilt that underground storage system too, just in case we were ever going to put an addition or whatever.
Like eliminate the portables or something.
Something crazy like that.
You brought up the village and the permits and all that, so this can't happen fast enough for me, as you guys know. So.
Right.
Timeline. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Can we
get this done in the next 2 months?
We're still arm wrestling over that.
No, you know, when we, when Bob and I actually went to discuss the current edition,
we actually presented the possibility that there was a phase two to this. So, and so we think that, you know, once we get to a schematic design level, just like we did with the last edition, we would have enough information then to go to the village and start that process. So I don't see any issues with that. We're not applying for any variances. We're within the FAR and all the other guidelines. So,
what's an FAR?
Florida Area Ratio.
Thank you.
You know, the buildable area.
I knew that, but I was just testing you.
you know, if we, you know, the sooner the start, we can start, the better. I don't foresee any issues with that.
But in terms of getting it done, though,
what we're talking about is best case being able to start construction July, mid-July, sometime between mid-July to around September 1st, contingent upon all of this process working very smoothly, and then being able to be done with construction first quarter of 2016. That's generally first quarter of 2016. So not
early next year.
Not in time for Christmas break. I don't think we can achieve that based on this upfront work that has to be done to get to a permit.
We're also going to see if we can't run concurrently, you know, permit process running concurrently with design documents.
Didn't run into EPA stuff for Churchill and all that?
That was regarding
if we were going to build the road in the very back end.
We're not going to run into
that. Was the wetlands.
The wetlands.
Right. Yeah.
We're not going to run into
that. Nope.
That
would be hard.
That's been done. Resolved.
So this could be done for the start of 2016 school year.
Spring
16-17.
Spring
August. Oh yeah, I mean we're thinking that worst case it would be done by spring break of 2016.
Right, but I'm saying for the school to take advantage of it would be.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no way you guys can accelerate it.
Oh, there's a way to accelerate it. It's going to be highly dependent on when we can get a permit, and then there would be a cost premium to do an accelerated schedule to pull the project forward for a Christmas turnover, because you'd end up working Saturdays, longer days, compress the schedule. So those things are achievable, and you know, I mean, it's just a matter of dollars and cents at that point. And we're giving what I'm saying to you is based on what experiences we've had going through the process with the village. There are certain steps that have to follow. We have to get certain meeting dates. We're anticipating a fairly efficient process in that schedule. But you know, to start construction any earlier than mid-July, I think would be hard, following a typical design submittal, approval, and permitting process.
I know we have a process, but if we voted tonight, that would save a little time, I guess.
Two weeks. Sorry, Joe.
It's 2 weeks?
Yeah.
If anybody's interested in doing that, I know I am.
And we can, you know, if that's the board's pleasure, we can take a look at what that cost premium would be if we were to start. Let's just pick a date. Let's say we assume we can start August 1st. We can look at what acceleration would cost as a premium.
Can you do that anyway, Jack, just to see what those...
Well, and also, once we start the discussions with the village, we'll come back, report back to you and see if we can accelerate that, because that's really the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, we wouldn't be in the position to have this opportunity without what happened at Lincoln, which was that process also moved forward. You were able to accelerate that process, too. I mean,
but part of the reason they were able to accelerate that process is they foregoed the underground storage. So that play area would be playable.
Lincoln?
Yeah, the initial design was to put underground storage over on the west side.
Oh, you're right. We
took that out, and then once we took that out, they already fell into all the
bend
points. And that's the big difference. They had to do.
We've got more work at Churchill, I think, than just having the site.
You're still going to have to go to stormwater, so you're still going to have to submit to
the permit.
So that's built in the time schedule that gets them started in July at the soonest, but most likely August. If you're expediting for all the premium time, overtime, and all the weekend time, what you're gaining, once again, whenever there's a cost, you want to look at what you're gaining. You're gaining January 5th
students using it versus
spring break
of March 31st, them using it. Mm-hmm. So it puts a little more burden on Bob and his crew to get everybody in 1 week as opposed to whatever it is, 2.5 weeks.
But I don't think you would transition over spring break.
I think that you would have classrooms that would be sitting there and people would demand to use them.
You think you could do that?
Oh, we would make it. I'm with Joe. I don't think I could have portables sitting there and people in portables in these beautiful classrooms sitting there unused. I think the teachers may be a little frustrated with me.
Yeah.
I may lose that.
We have that spreadsheet about portables, and we've been following that. Like, our sunk cost is at, like, I don't know, as of
we're
couple years ago.
It, by the way,
yeah, I think that update will be important because as of, like, 2011, our sunk cost was, like, $2.5 million on portables through leases and, all that other stuff. So
installation, rent.
Where does that come into play in terms of, we will no longer have the portables. We've already gotten rid of some, right? So I know there's a cost that's even more expensive to even take those down in some cases.
Well, that's where the mobile removal cost
is. And what's the moving? I know you said we haven't
had to utilize this. We've had that included in all the presentations that we've given the board.
Right.
So, you know what, we've never utilized that dollar figure. So I
But that's different from the mobile removal and site.
You know, if I were to have to call movers to have something
right.
moved.
Okay, so physically.
Yeah.
So we gain some dollars from that, from the removal?
Well, they're not
portables?
Included in this presentation here.
Okay.
Because we haven't utilized them before. Okay.
Some long-term savings.
Some long-term, though, obviously. Okay.
I have some items that I'd like to... I covered them in our finance meeting, and I'd like to... it'll be redundant for some of the people who are in the audience.
No, you're good.
That happens sometimes, but it's worthy of it.
People are saying they can't hear.
Okay, I'll speak up. The first, I want to go to something I asked Bob to do on the soft cost, because we were talking a lot about the savings on the hard cost. So I always think it's good to look at the whole budget, mm-hmm. and this goes to the point you were making. And this may give you a little more comfort, Erica. There's actually some savings in the other contractors, what we budgeted. Bob had put a nice spreadsheet together. He had budgeted $340,000. We spent about $75,000 to date. We are going to spend some more of those monies, but there are some savings in there. The other major cost in the soft are contracted costs, and we don't have any overages to date, and I would anticipate that we wouldn't have any to the end of the project. Well, it's their contracts. It's those two guys. It's their contract. So I think that's important. That
I can't see this. Is someone nodding their head?
And that, that is, but that just for me, we had to look at the whole budget. Bob put all that together. I think that's good for us to know. Because I look at when we have that number, I think the 264, hopefully it'll turn into about 200,000 at the end of the day. And then we don't have to take the other 500 out, and we can kind of leave only 300 out, and then I feel better about that. The other areas, and I want to thank, and I think I'm going to thank you guys again, but, you know, a lot of the administration, Paul, I've been spending a lot of time trying to understand this. I thank Liz and Kelly for meeting with me. They kind of know my views. And I'm really coming from where we... And so thanks for everybody's time, because I'm trying to educate myself on this as best as I can. I do... Spending $3.3 million, although after going through everything, I think we will be at the lower end of that budget. That's where I feel we're going to be when I look at Bob's numbers and what Jack and Ron put together. But for me, I go back to one of our workshop 9 months ago, 14 mm-hmm. months ago, whatever those two workshops were, and we talked about right-sizing. And I look at, we were right-sizing this school for me, and in those discussions, it's always been only four classrooms. Mm-hmm. And by adding four more, the right-sizing is 80 to 120 students more, closer probably to 80 students more, we'll call it 100 students more. And so my gut tells me I need to go through this in the minutia that I always shouldn't, but, you know, I think it's imperative when we have this much money in our budget. So for me, understanding the timeline and why we need to vote right away is good to get people in there right away, but there are other reasons, too, to vote right away, as we vetted out in the Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. And one of the keys, so that you guys
add in, you guys answered this when we were in finance, but one of the key things of voting before March 21st, when Jack and his team puts up this exterior wall and the plan for additional classrooms, five additional classrooms right now, is that we would do it differently if we were going to put these four on. And there's going to be a cost savings if we do that versus building two exterior walls. So there is a need to vote right away from my standpoint when I learned that. And that changes things. Because quite frankly, when I came into the finance meeting, I'm looking at it and saying, okay, you start, we're going to finish this building July 15th. You're not going to start the other one until September 1st. There's a gap. What are you doing? Where does it matter? Now I understand where it matters. And I think that, to me, that's important. Where I'm still struggling and I'm trying to understand is the utilization, because before we right-sizing, we wanted the school to be smaller. What I've kind of learned, and I'm going to go through the school tomorrow with Jack and Karen, and Karen's aided me a lot in my education of how this school will be broken up in either scenario, but I want to go back 1 second. It's imperative for this board to realize that if we approve this today or in 2 weeks, that option number one on Paul's list, which is the addition or modifications, is no longer an option, because that needed six classrooms with a different design of classrooms. Maybe you can add on, but to me,
my understanding was that the design we have here, that later we could come in and put the two kindergarten classes and it wouldn't change the design.
Would it change the cost? Would you design
it? It's the same scenario. You know, if you finish these...
We're back to where we are.
Yeah, tearing off and modifying the end of that building.
I mean, the savings and costs, which I know we're not voting on, but I'd like to just add the two kindergarten classes now, and then that school's good to go.
Put six on.
Yeah.
Put six on.
And this way it's done in one swoop. They can do full-day kindergarten, and we're good to go.
But that doesn't do anything for, just to be clear, that doesn't do anything for the rest of the district, the other three
right.
buildings. Just
no, that is. I've got ideas for those buildings, too.
But then we don't have the fund balances to cover an additional two classrooms potential right now.
Yeah, that's not on the recommendation.
No, it's not.
I just want to be really clear that we're not.
I'm saying, Joe, that you could still do the two kindergarten
given
classes.
Given that I'm struggling to... Because we're forcing ourselves in a timeline when this one building is going to be built, so we go to an exterior wall. I wouldn't want to cause the other thing to happen. So
but you can still add it on afterwards.
You could. Yeah. At a cost that's going to make those numbers even higher that were presented. But you'd still have the same information. So, point taken, you can still do it.
Right.
I take it. At the end of the day, I look at it like this. I look at this... You know, this is the design that Ron came up with. We talked about design in the finance committee. It's important to get over. You know, this design is what we're approving, not necessarily, but it seems that's the guidance we're giving you to go do your full drawings. And so to me, what was important and what we really haven't vetted, and we don't necessarily have time to vet, is the 900 other designs that this could be. I mean, is the corridor in the exact same place that is the most efficient? Now, we walked through that in the finance committee. I'm much more comfortable. I think that's important to state for the record than I was just blindly coming in here. And you'll update us as you do the design plans, and there may be modifications to that along the way to hopefully save us some money or make it a better design overall for the children at school. But one of the things that's important for me is that the utilization, I look at it, we have $3 million. We're going to spend $3 million to fix the portable problem at Churchill. That's not necessarily
a bad thing. More than that. Because you got the initial four classrooms, you got the detention.
I'm counting the remaining.
And the total is probably more like $6 million.
It's more than that. It was their total was
so
5.7. Okay. So it's really 5.7 plus 3.3 would be $9 million.
Yep.
So that's what it is. But I just mean the remaining four portables to get everything equitable. Is there a better way to do it? That's the still open question I have, reconfiguring things. I'm going to go tomorrow, like I said, to the building, why it's in, why the students are in there, and just get a better feel for it. If we were voting right now, I don't feel like I have all the information, but I did gain a lot of information at the Finance Committee, and hopefully I gain more information tomorrow when I walk through the building. Oh, they have it up now.
Yeah, I found it in my email.
Joe,
I got one.
Can I clarify something? You know, when you talk about it's costing us X dollars to do this at Churchill, each building is so unique and the sites are so different that there was I'm going to use the term premium, which is the wrong term to use, but I think about it in that way. There's more of a premium cost at a site like Churchill just because of all the additional work we had to do. That big bowl in the back and the detention. I mean, it was going to cost us more to correct, you know, that part of the building plan. So it was going to, in any way, it was going to cost us more in order to solve the portable problem because of that site. You know, Ben Franklin less so, but we had already sunk cost into that when we did all of that intergovernmental work with the village to do the parking lot and all that other stuff. So that was already done. So I hear what you're saying, but I want to make sure that, you know, that there's this clarity around the fact that we have such unique sites. If all the buildings were like Lego buildings, then we'd be talking about the same thing, and they're not. So every time we touch it, we are dealing with a different piece. I hear what you're saying.
No, I understand. I mean, that's fine. I mean, they definitely had more problems. There's Lincoln has an existing problem that we're not rectifying either.
Right.
Well, and this.
So they have the same, a similar problem in the fact that the play area and the grass is not usable 95% of the time the kids are in school. It's usable when the kids aren't in school in the summer. But that does the neighbors well, but not the kids that we're trying to.
Joe, to your point about the design, that design is similar to the design that was initially presented when we did sort of the phase one, phase two, right? I mean.
Which design are you referencing?
Well, when you initially gave us the design for what we're calling phase one, whatever.
Right.
Right, then we knew that we would build part two there.
Correct.
Right?
I don't think that's true that we knew we would do it. It was an option that...
It was an option.
So, because the right size... It goes back to my right sizing comment that, you know, when we looked at phase two, for you know, we looked at it as these four not being added because we were going to rectify the portable problem a different way. And that's where... when this was presented for me, and that's what I'm trying to communicate here, there you know, it was a disconnect, and my gut was like, well, why? What's the difference today than it was before? And I'm just explaining the process I'm going through because I want to feel very comfortable, and I want anybody who cares what I think to know that I've gone through all these steps to feel very comfortable that this is what we need to do. Because we're adding four classrooms, but what I've realized in this, and maybe I'll sum it up and we can move on, is that whatever Scott's doing there, he's piling a lot of it in there, more so than anybody else has piled in before. I think that's what I'm going to find tomorrow. I mean, Karen's really educated me on this, that teachers are using the same space during the day on top of each other. If not, one's walking out a door and another's walking in the same door. The minute the one walks out, so because they are on top of each other. Because at the end of the day, we're adding four classrooms so that they can be on par with the other K through fives in our district. To have the STEAM lab, to have the math lab, to have the literacy lab, to have the workstation. So,
and the parking,
which is in Bob's budget for fixing the parking. That was in Bob's budget that he
and just
to
by
us.
Our enrollment numbers, we have 100 more students at that school, 100 plus over Lincoln, but
100
over Ben Franklin, 100 over Forest Glen.
Exactly.
And all those extra, you know, and the teacher population that goes along with that, just the, you know, the add-on. So.
But we were all, in right sizing, we were always going to have 100 more students there.
Right. But
what this comes back to for me is our original goal was to eliminate the portables. I think the reason we didn't go this far originally might have been more around costs and equity. When we step back, we need to eliminate the portables, and this seems to be the proper next step.
I think part of it, Dean, was we thought we could eliminate the portables through a phase two that
had a different outcome on Spalding or some other site at the time. I think that was what we were thinking. But
hey, I agree.
Well, so, not all of us were thinking that.
No, I understand.
Thank you, I mean, to me, this is, you know, it's always good to have you go through the minutia because that helps solidify the decision because I know you do it very thoroughly. And so I'm glad you do. And that helps me with my conviction that we should do this. But it's just also the right thing to do, I think, for, you know, a school that we're given our current plan, you know, might not be able to take care of the portables till 2018 or 19. So,
and we have the dollars to do it, which we didn't expect.
Well, we always had the dollars to do it, I think. But that's just my opinion.
Well, and not in the way that we're able to fund it now, I think. So, okay. Thank you, Joe.
Anybody else? I mean, can we vote on it tonight?
I don't have a recommendation in front of you. I mean, that's board can do something. Say it again. I think Joe really wants to get out there tomorrow.
I thought you said it was
benefit. It's not the topic that I'm voting on. It's the process. I don't want to set a precedent that we're starting voting early on things that we think are most important. So
we'll ask Ron to work overtime to get the design plans done 2 weeks early.
Keep going, Ron.
Is Ron nodding again?
Yes, Ron is nodding.
Ron has left the building. All right, guys, apologize here, but I got to find the little script thing here.
Full
day kindergarten recommendation.
Karen, we had a lengthy conversation. I'm not sure if you want to continue on that piece or if you have any other questions on that topic itself.
This isn't about kindergarten, but this is to the recommendation. The recommendation states to the contingent upon approval of facilities plans and funding available to support. And I'm almost tying these two last conversations, this conversation and the last conversation together. Contingent on approval, and this is my thought, contingent on approval of facilities plan, funding available to support, and the removal of Hadley portables. I think, from my perspective, I still want to get rid of all the Hadley portables, and it has to be part of the recommendation referendum conversation that we're going to have.
I'm fine changing that piece coming in 2 weeks.
I agree with Patrick.
Well, I'm absolutely fine with adding that piece on there, Patrick.
I'm wondering how we as a board would deal with, because we are approving something that has a contingency in it, are we saying that we think maybe we couldn't approve a plan and therefore we wouldn't be bound to this recommendation?
So my thinking is, all along, is full-day kindergartens for all students, that it's not full-day kindergarten for a group of students, and I think that's really an important difference. And as we've looked at this, we keep saying that if you're going to do full-day kindergarten for all students, you need facilities enhancements, whatever that looks like, whatever the board so chooses to select as one of their options. So I believe it has to be tied to that next piece, that larger piece that you were referring to. That's why we put it on there. I wanted to be really clear with the community, because we get calls almost daily. Nancy is saying, do we have full day kindergarten starting next year? And we're like, no, we don't. The earliest would be 2018, by the time we can have everything up and running in 2017-2018 year, we'd be up and running with it. So trying to also bring clarity to that as well.
Well, there's another step to this, too, and I made a note to myself when Karen was talking about this, and it was that, and I don't want this to get lost in the conversation, but Karen, you talked about the fact that, you know, should the board approve to move ahead to, you know, continue to say, let's move forward before they kindergarten. This important piece is this parent-teacher task force, the work that group would do, which would also help to inform some direction on the facilities piece as well. And to get those voices
that Karen would be
expertise,
working with.
Karen.
the,
to get that expertise from the teachers, from administrators in the buildings, from parents who have an interest in that, so that that can be, you know, that structure becomes more sound, and that helps to direct some of the next step.
And ultimately, that's what this is it's that springboard. If the board said no on full-day kindergarten, then we need to stop all of those other pieces and just move forward. I mean, that's why this is an important vote of saying, yes, move forward. Now, recognizing that this one does not come with the cost associated with it, but it does give administration that notice to move forward, for Karen to continue studying it there, but for us to continue down the facilities pathway.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm struggling a little bit, because you have that authority from us to continue to do that. And I'm, you know, we go to a...
But we've never had this board say to me, full day kindergarten. We've had some thumbs up, had some thumbs to the side, we've had thumbs all over the place. I think it's now time to be able to say to the administration, move forward one way or the other, so we can help you make a decision, so we can bring forward the cost, because that was one of the biggest questions that we had on that night was cost. What are those? So we try to give you some...
And some modeling.
And some modeling.
Yeah, so what I was trying to say is, I think where I struggle a little bit is, usually when you vote on something, we have, you know, I guess a clearer, more definitive plan. Like, I don't even know what happens in full-day kindergarten, right? I don't even know. I mean, I know it's a longer time, it's more relaxed, there's some science, but I don't know what it looks like. You know, what is full-day kindergarten? How are we defining that? So I know I'm struggling. I mean, it's not that I don't want full-day kindergarten, but I feel like I'm voting on something that really doesn't have a lot of meat to it in terms of what it actually is. So I don't know. That's not typically the way we vote on things, and that's maybe the other board members can help me come along on this, because I'm not. It's just like a vote. It's like a vote of confidence, I guess, is what it is. And then another board is going to take this over anyway.
So we're not taking action on this until the 23rd.
Right.
So in between now and then, I mean, you bring up a valid point, John. I mean, my thought in coming in tonight was vetting some of, you know, we were still talking about research. We had more data. You know, I think, you know, I've come to some peace with that myself, just making some calls and doing some other work the last 2 weeks on this. And I think that there is, you know, this ties into some of the discussions we had on Wednesday and Saturday. And are we going to have a summary of that tonight, too, so we can share mm-hmm. some of that also? But there was, at the Wednesday session, a lot of talk about this. And, you know, Wheaton's decision, 89's decision, you know, at least one of the tables I was at. So between now and the 23rd, I think, you know, it would be worthwhile to have, and here's what a day would look like. You know, we have the 2.5 hours. And I'm not saying, Paul, you know, from 1 to 2 we would do this, from 3 to 4 we would do that, whatever.
But what I just heard is that they need the team to get together to do that. So I feel like we'd be voting on, like, they haven't even designed that yet.
I don't need to vote on the curriculum. That's their job to figure out. Yeah. That's not my job. Our job is to decide, is this the vision that the district wants to continue to move forward on, and to trust the experts to come back and say, here's what a day would look like. Here's how it would scaffold into first grade. Here's how it supports Common Core. You know, all those pieces.
I think what Karen gave you tonight is that foundation from the academic officer of the district saying, this is that larger scale view of what it is. What you would do is bring back preschool, kinder, and first grade teachers to add even more depth to that piece. But what you saw here tonight is exactly what we're going to be going for. It may not be at 9:22 we're going to be doing this, and then at 10:14 we're going to be doing that piece of it. But I think she shared with you that overall vision for the district of what it looks like, what it can be, and what we want it to be.
But the value add.
Absolutely.
But the curriculum will always have a, you know, I hate to always come back to money, but the curriculum will always have a cost to it, and that's why it's still contingent on funding, right? So it's going to, I mean, if you put, you know, 3 teachers per student, you know, if that's the recommendation, the funding is going to go higher. So we've all stated, you know, no one's being abashed about what's going to happen. This has to go to referendum.
So as we get the groups together and we start defining the curricula and the teacher structure and all that other stuff, that's going to be part of the operating cost. And that'll give us the opportunity to determine, okay, what action plan are we going to take? Because the funding of those programs is going to cost this much money, and then it's going to go to referendum.
Yeah. And, you know, Paul and I have had lots of discussions around this because it's always been, does the board want full day kindergarten or not?
Sure.
Right. And that's how it started. So we had that conversation months ago, and people said they wanted to know this. So I guess maybe you guys have gotten to the point where you have enough of the this is answered to know whether you can vote or not. And if you don't, I guess redirect your questions since we'll be voting on it on the 23rd.
Okay.
True.
All right.
You know, I guess I got to echo what John said. Conceptually, I like the concept. I can't wrap my head around the cost piece because it hasn't been presented.
What?
And I know that's tied into the whole piece. You know, the whole facilities piece, what you wrote here, that it's based on this recommendation.
I would adamantly disagree. I don't know. We've shown you costs for modifications. We've shown you costs for a K-5 school. We've shown you a cost for early learning center. We've shown you operating costs for each one of those. Honestly, I thought I was really listening to the board a couple months ago when you pushed this back to me and said, you need to bring me costs. I can't make a decision on full-day kindergarten without you giving me overall costs. So when I sit here tonight and I hear that we haven't brought those, then the board's going to need to be really clear with me. Because obviously it's not connecting my head what I'm missing for you.
I kind of agree with you, Paul, in the sense that what we've done is we've taken that scenario A, B, and C from a hard building cost.
Yeah.
You've thrown some operational costs on it. I think we still have some work on where we're going to land on that in terms of community engagement.
Absolutely.
But I think we have the structure in place to allow the direction to keep moving forward. I don't think, you know, again, it's almost out of our hands, you know, in terms of how this is going to be accepted by the community. You know, again, we're going to get those numbers. We're going to hopefully with the group that the administration is going to bring together to say, with community engagement, with additional community engagement, how we're going to do an EC or K-5 or expansion of the schools, what's the community going to accept? And that's all going to land on the community in terms of this is the best option through building a wall to the operational cost that's going to be entailed to passing that referendum. The recommendation that we're going to have is choose option A, B, or C with this operating model.
And I think that next piece, I was going to have it in my superintendent report, but I think now would be a good time to do it. It seems to flow in nicely around that community listening session. What did those two, one Saturday afternoon, one Wednesday evening, what transpired in those meetings? And I thought it was, there were fantastic opportunities for community members to give feedback, and there were many questions being answered. And quite honestly, I couldn't even get through on Saturday. I was trying to go as quickly as I possibly could, but we had a lot of parents who were asking tons of great questions all the way through. I thought the message, and I'm going to ask Erica to kind of walk through. We brought up some of the charts, all the charts from both of those evenings, and then she's going to be posting kind of those big snapshots which each group grabbed. But what I took away from my perspective was we've got to do something. What it is, I would totally agree. There was different Saturday, there was all kinds of different ideas. Wednesday night, they seem to really connect a little closer to the early learning center. But what I took away from that evening, or those two nights, or the afternoon and evening, was we need more. We need to keep having more and more of the conversation so we can do exactly what Patrick said, see what the community is really gravitating toward. And two sessions isn't enough on this big of a decision. So keep having those conversations. Keep seeing where the community wants to bring that piece to. So with that, I'll ask Erica to...
Paul actually did a nice job summarizing, but I want to give a little bit more detail. And the reason that we brought all of the various charts is because what I realized sitting there, those kind of my aha moments with these community engagement pieces, is that a lot of this is just very personal. People are thinking about their own family situations when they're thinking about whatever the solution is. So there's just a lot of different ideas and a lot of different lenses in the room. So I just want to first summarize kind of what the format was for those who were not able to be there. Paul did start with just sharing some information, a very abbreviated presentation, or form of the presentation that he gave to the board on the 26th. And so he shared information about the upcoming recommendation for Churchill. He went through the three facilities options to support full-day kindergarten and also the space problems in our school. And then he talked a little bit about the proposal to replace the 10 portables at Hadley in the new classrooms, along with a possible cafetorium. So there was a lot to discuss. There was a lot of information overload. There were about 60 people total at the sessions that engaged in this conversation. All, I think at some point, all of the board members were there. So they were, after Paul gave his brief presentation, it became a breakout session, and all of the board members went and sat at the tables, and that's where I think the true listening happened. And you can really hear the community kind of talking and struggling with some of the same topics that we're talking here with the board about. So I thought that was really good. Some of the common themes overall, and I will say, there was so much information, so much great feedback. So this is just really, you can't really say that this is representative of all. This is 60 people. I think the takeaway too is that we need to do so much more of this. We need to learn more about kind of the community and where they're at and what you would support and all of that. So, but some of the themes that came out is that the people really want our district to have competitive schools. That I think was very clear. We need to do something about our space issues. No one really could quite decide then, as they shouldn't. There's a lot of information and a lot of decisions to be made. But I think there was pretty strong agreement that there should be something across the board, something that happened. There was a lot of conversation and on the charts that the modifications to the buildings really don't solve all of our problems. So that came out. There's a lot of concern about the conversation around boundary changes, but that was seemed kind of scary to some people, not to all, but to some, the majority, I would say. The concern about transportation of kindergartners, and that there is some worry, the concern about if you take the kindergartners out of the elementary schools, would they lose that soft touch of, the being with their siblings and, meeting at the door and the principal kind of welcoming into, so would the early learning center have that aspect of it? I would say from the chart, from being at both sessions, that, as Paul alluded to, the Saturday group, it sounded like the majority of that group was kind of leaning towards that they could possibly support a K-5, I would say. Then on Wednesday, there was a little bit of a shift, and that conversation really centered more around the early learning center. So it was interesting. It just kind of depends on how the community members were engaging it with each other at the time. The other piece that I think was clear at both sessions was that people really did feel strongly about Hadley, and I think they were glad that was a part of this, and I don't know if that was an expected piece. It almost felt like the community was pleasantly surprised that was coming forward, so that attention to Hadley is very important on both of those days. I have several pages of more notes, but I just wanted to pull a couple pieces out. And then, like I said, look at what
the community really wrote on those pages, and that's what I transcribed for you. That will be available for everyone in the board minutes that Nancy will be posting. Do you have any other comments or questions?
Yeah, from your perspectives.
You're all there. Thank you.
Well,
Go ahead.
No, Dean, go
ahead, Dean. You're up.
Okay. I attended both sessions, and I would say that we started out kind of with our goals, and our goals have always been to eliminate the portables, right size the schools, and now we've added this third goal about full-day kindergarten. And I would, my summary of the 2 days is everyone agrees that we should get rid of the portables. I think a lot of people are starting to understand now the problem with the right sizing. It's not just adding in classrooms, but the common areas are stressed, and the traffic patterns in the areas around the schools are stressed, and we have a lot of agreement on that. And it appeared, at least from the people who attended, the vast majority were interested in full-day kindergarten. I would echo what Erica said, though, about the fact is that there was no clear agreement except that maybe the additions wouldn't work because that wouldn't right-size the schools. So the issue is still about the two choices. Do we build a K through 5 or do we build in early learning? And that's what's going to take us longer to figure out.
Catherine?
Yeah, I feel like we put the mandate out to you last fall to give us more information. I think you've done a really good job at collecting that information, and you know, we are dealing with uncertainty because we don't know exactly what the future is going to look like. We can't be super precise with predictions in terms of costs and numbers of students or even public opinion. It's our best guess as to what will come down the road. I personally feel like you've given us enough information for us to make a decision. What I have really heard from our community is that there is very strong and broad support for full-day kindergarten, and that may force us to make some tough choices as to how we will provide it, but it sounds to me we don't have a choice about whether we should provide it. And it might be easy to discuss more and research more, but we can't do the easy thing right now. We have to do the hard thing today. This district wants full-day kindergarten. We're going to do it. Now let's put our thoughts on to how we're going to make it happen.
All right. I jotted down my takeaways after I left. I agree. I think people were supportive of full-day kindergarten. Obviously, they want to understand what the implications of that are in terms of cost and, you know, what it looks like. And I came out thinking there was no consensus on the solution to move forward.
Saturday was.
at least that's the way Saturday went. You know, each group had a rationale of, you know, what they preferred or what their recommendation was. And quite honestly, sitting on the board for the past 8 years or 9 years, whatever it is, that's been consistent every time. I mean, we've had probably 3 or 4 different community groups look at and make recommendations, and it's been, and previous boards, right? It's been K through 5, it's been new middle school. Early childhood center actually came up for some reason in the 80s when I look back at history, but it's just consistent with the discussion over the last 7 years that there really is no consensus on a path to move forward. I felt Saturday the leaning was towards K through 5, early childhood after that, and then the additions. At least at the tables I was at, there was definitely a strong consensus that, you know, taxes are high here and that a referendum may not pass. I heard that quite a bit. I did hear there was a desire to hear more about full-day kindergarten from a social-emotional perspective, not just the academic perspective, right? So what does that mean? I remember my kindergarten. We brought a rug and we took a nap, which we could all use probably right now. Pull out our rugs and take a nap and continue this discussion. But, you know, what does it really look like? It's also interesting, you know, we're so involved in this that you know, we always think the communication's there, but it was kind of interesting. There were some folks that were still not fully aware of the accomplishments that have occurred or the scope of what the additions are doing and not doing. So I thought maybe communication could be better. In some of the sessions I attended, there was a revisiting of the previous solution of a 4-5 center, and that seemed to actually get
5-6.
No, 4-5. Oh, sorry, 5-6.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Let me start a rumor.
Don't start that one.
Yeah, so you are listening.
I try.
A 5-6 center, that actually seemed to get some legs with some of the folks that that were at the table. We've had that discussion. That was actually initially a preferred solution with two different alternatives, but that kind of came back. I think we've flushed all this out. You know, 10 different ways. There are 3 or 4 options out there. That's consistent with my experience over the, 8 or 9 years. And basically, it comes down to a lot of it has to do with some of the impacts of boundary changes and the degree of the boundary change. Interestingly, I did do a little history. I don't know if it's accurate, but you know, the whole boundary change was kind of interesting to me. But actually realized that we did boundary changes in 2000. We did boundary changes in 1998. We did them in 1997. We did them in 1993. We did them in 1987, 1981, 1978, 1962, 1958. Point is, I went back and said, wow, we've done a lot of boundary changes. Which was a surprise to me. And they were either adding schools, subtracting schools, yeah, overcrowding of schools. So we have done a lot of boundary changes.
Interesting.
That was just from a historical perspective interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going next.
The Wednesday session was a lot different than the Saturday session, as Erica said. It was overwhelmingly the early learning center that was discussed.
I apologize for point of discussion here. Are we trying to support the recommendation in what we learned in Saturday and Sunday, or are we just revisiting Saturday and Sunday?
I think what we were doing was kind of we took where it was the board report and moved it up in the agenda, so we're kind of reporting out.
So Paul was going to ask us
what we thought
of the session and what our takeaways
were.
Okay,
so from a meeting perspective, do we need to get back on the rails to this recommendation and then go to board reports so we don't lose?
I felt like we were there.
So
we were going down that road, so as opposed to later on in the superintendent report.
We're done with
it. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Sound good? Okay. So Wednesday seemed to have much more support for the Early Learning Center. And I agree with you. I mean, I thought the K-5 was just a little ahead on Saturday. I mean, that was my feeling. I think one of the key things that the Early Learning Center was discussed numerous times at both sessions was staggered start times was a major concern. It's probably on your notes, but it seemed to be a major concern because people needed to coordinate the drop-off, and that was the one thing I want to say. And the other thing, besides the 5th and 6th grade, which was brought up at Saturday. On Wednesday, there was a request to revisit Hadley's, adding on to Hadley and making it a 5th, 6th center and a 7th, 8th center. And the thought process there from the two groups that were talking about it was, that was 2007, we're in 2015, it's a different time, there's different people. There's no reason you shouldn't go and revisit something that failed miserably based on the vote, but that was the opinions of the folks out there. Other than that, I think, Erica, you hit all the points right on the head, so thank you.
I think just from a demographic on Wednesday and on Saturday and then Wednesday again, I felt like there were new faces in the crowd. It was interesting on Wednesday night there were at least, I think, 3 couples or 1 parent who don't have children yet, but they came because they were interested in really kind of getting a feel for what the conversation was around.
And so one of those folks I had was at a table with and promised to send him some information, so I did that the other night. And kind of fill in a little bit the blank, the board did get an email right after some of the conversation at the end of January that talked about, D41 parent and talked about, here would be my preference, and did speak about the fact that the modifications were the least expensive. We all got this email. And, and that would be their level of support. So I think as we move forward, again, it's people looking at it from those various places, not the least of which certainly is the cost associated with it. I think the interesting thing for me, and I'll piggyback on what John was saying about the 5-6 center, people brought that up. And John, you mentioned at Saturday or at some other time that one of the reasons that that went away is because, and this is the Saturday and Wednesday conclusion, so what do we have to work with? We have a piece of land that's 4.86 acres big. Right. Period. You know, that's what we have. That's not changed since 2000, whenever this started. So I think that was good to be reiterated. Also, even though, and you mentioned this already, that we've been talking about this for a long time, your turnover, new families, they don't have the context. And so it is important to do a little bit of that presentation. I think it allowed for some good, lots of different questions. The question of, again, came up, can we build a second floor? And Jack Ron did their best to, again, explain, the cost of that and the plan of that and all that. But when the 5-6 came up, I had promised a couple of parents on Wednesday that I would go, look at numbers for that site. And John had said the reason that we didn't look at that was because of numbers. Right now, this year, between 5 and 6 students looking at our 5th and 6th, we have 798 5th and 6th graders total. And then even for 2016, we have like 700. Say that again?
I call that 800.
800. round up. We have 760 students for 2016. So, our numbers, this is that consistency, I think, and also our timeline on our census. It's just, we're just not going to have huge swings. And so, just the size of the lot, I think, was a reality check for people who had not, to your point, kind of been in on it. And I think I agree with what Paul said and had sent him a note around this myself to say, one takeaway from a parent that I thought was quite good was she said, the more that I hear other parents talk about this, the more I realize we are on lots of different palettes. And we need to talk to each other more and let us have this conversation. Because, there needs to be some reality check around, community members, whether they're current parents, community members without kids in school or whatever, so that they hear each other. And I thought that was a really good takeaway. One last thing was second table I went to on Wednesday that made a point to tell me to share this with the board, which I told him that I would, and it was he was thrilled about the way that this was being funded, the additions to the schools currently, because it shows that that the district and the board is looking to not put as much on the taxpayer, and that we're conscious of not only having that conversation and saying it, but actually following through. So he wanted to share that message. And the other part of it was, he said, we've been talking about this since my kids attended. He doesn't have kids in the district anymore. It's time to act for the long term. So this is a 40-year solution. It's a 50-year solution. It's not because my child is in X grade, I want this. And so that's our lever to have to figure out how to push it. But the more the parents talk to each other and hear from each other, I think that creates, it coalesces their energy around it as well, which is powerful.
And I think, historically on the 5-6, to your point, the lot's not big enough for, I'm going to round it up to 800 kids, mm-hmm. because at least the architects, back when that solution was developed, required additional land to the east of the lot that we have.
Yeah.
Putting a 5-6 center there would be a challenge without more land, which is basically what the conclusion of the architects were at the time.
Right.
True?
Pretty much. Yeah. Absolutely did it all.
Well, that's kind of what I heard.
Patrick? I think what I heard Saturday and Wednesday were several different options. And as much as it was a listening tour and I tried to listen, I also tried to let the community members know that when we land on a position and this thing moves forward, it's kind of that we have to get the best recommendation that the community is going to do this. And Dean Distill, somebody you founder, I don't know if he was going to say it, but I think he had a conversation with the community member. He says, I feel sorry for you guys because, you know, there's five different options out there, and you're going to make 80% of the people unhappy with whatever decision you make because you're going to pick one. But that goes to, I think, what Erica was saying of we have to make sure, and what Paul's saying is we have to make sure that we get the community engaged in this final decision so there's no aha or what were you talking about or we weren't engaged in this conversation, because we have to hone this decision down to one recommendation that we give to the community that's going to give it the best opportunity to pass a referendum because they want full day kindergarten. So as much as I listened, I also tried to help the education process there. So that's what I took this out of. Yeah.
Okay, anyone else? Okay. Do you want to
consent
talk agenda? About no, before I go to the consent agenda, you want to wrap up with your timeline or you want to come back to that date?
So what we'd be looking at, full day kindergarten recommendation, would come back in 2 weeks with a recommendation to the board. And then from there, what we would be doing is engaging the community in further conversations about the facilities. We keep hearing that it's about two. We'll continue with the modification, see if that trend continues, because as Erica said, there's about 60, 65 people, but we want to keep having that conversation with more and more people. So I would like to extend that piece out there for a little while and get more people engaged, and then allow Karen to if the board says yes to full day kindergarten, for Karen to bring together the kindergarten, preschool, and first grade teachers to really hone in exactly what does that day look like, even though we give you a pretty good overview of it. So allow that to continue. And again, recognizing that there will be a new board in coming months, to engage them into that conversation. And then as we move from there, allowing that timeline for still a eyeballing, if the board so chooses, a March 2017. Yeah, 2017.
2016.
16, sorry. I knew I was getting that wrong. 2016 referendum.
So, really the only thing we'll be voting on then at the next meeting is full day kindergarten.
Correct.
And the Hadley additions. I'm sorry, the Churchill edition. Sure.
I missed that one.
I'm trying to get that in, guys.
I missed that. Yes.
So we'll be voting on that, and then there will be no vote at this point on which option to take, but more fleshing out the full-day kindergarten model, assuming we approve it, and then fleshing out through community engagement another whatever blue ribbon committee, whatever we're going to call it, to flesh out what the right option is for the Spalding site.
Good summary.
And are we limiting it to the Spalding site, or are we opening up beyond that too?
I think we say right there at the Spalding site, we've gone down. I think prior board went down that path. I think it's the Spalding site.
Okay.
Right. But thanks for the clarity.
Yep.
You don't think there'll be any discussion on anything at Hadley at all besides what's already been proposed?
Well, I think that's part of that conversation too.
No, but I don't. What I'm saying is revisiting anything on Hadley where we could go beyond what mm-hmm. you guys proposed.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
Or modify that. I mean.
I'm glad you brought that piece up. That Hadley is not the foregone conclusion. That's what it is. That's the thinking right now. But we do want to engage Hadley and have their conversations and community members on Hadley. So thank you for mentioning that.
It is a foregone conclusion because we're going to be voting on the recommendation that says that Hadley is contingent.
Oh, yeah. But just like all of the other pieces, just making sure that that's exactly how they want it done.
It's not the solution that was presented only. It's opening that up for discussion.
But we will have that piece on the recommendation for next week.
2 weeks.
So now that that's presented there.
We've been here a week.
So that feels like about it.
I'm assuming that's a 3 to 5 month process, then, basically.
Yes.
All right, terrific. Action items, consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, resignations and retirements, finance, facilities and operations, school district payment order, January 21st, 2015 through February 3rd, 2015, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, January 26, 2015 regular board meeting, January 26, 2015 regular board meeting closed session.
Motion.
Second. Roll call.
Mr. Alger.
Dean.
Dean Lozen.
No, he's on. Dean, he's on. Don't. Okay.
Do we abstain?
Mr. Ellis.
No, I'm here. My phone goes to sleep, and I have to turn it back on to get it on mute. Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski.
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson.
Mr.
Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwin?
Yes. Superintendent recommendations, 2015-2016 student fees. May I have a motion to approve the administration recommendation for student fees for the 2015-2016 school year as presented? Second.
Second.
Discussion?
I just want to add a point I added before. I really want to stress that everybody... All the educators tell us that extracurricular activities are a positive impact on a student's life. I think we should look at changing the fee structure to not be charging the first activity any dollars. And I think that would promote maybe more. I know Lori is trying; she's giving me some participation rates, and I think those need to continue to increase, and I think that's one way to increase it. But I'm for the current recommendation. I just want to make sure we're looking out for that.
Yeah, you know, Joe, this comes up almost every year, and we sort of kind of come back to, you know, not really doing anything with it. So, I mean...
It's been 8 years.
Yeah.
Good
point as well, take.
No, I mean, every year it's the same thing, so... Hopefully someone takes the action item and gets it done.
But I think part of your question, Joe, is also about, you know, how big a deterrent is that? I know that the PTAs, every single PTA unit has a scholarship.
Yeah, they fund.
I mean, there's a line item in the budget that allows for students who can't afford X. I know for community outreach at Hadley, we do, soccer shoes, soccer cleat collections, things like that to make sure that kids can do it.
I will answer your question. I doubt if it's a deterrent so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably minimal. But to me, it's a message. Is it important or is it not important?
Mm-hmm.
If it is important and it does help students, then we should be for it. I mean, I think you could restructure all the fees. I mean, we've talked about that in finance, and we haven't raised them in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our collections have improved, so I like that. But I think they should all be revisited. But I think we should make a statement.
I'll bring that back, and then Lori, please. To supplemental pay committee to look at that specifically.
Participation fee,
yeah.
Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Superintendent's report, enrollment update.
So the enrollment continues to be steady, as we've shown in different forms. I already touched on the Wednesday, Saturday listening sessions, so I will forego any other superintendent report for this evening.
Terrific. Board reports. Are there any board members that would like to report out?
Just two quick things. We had a calendar committee meeting, and I know that Paul put that in our update, so we'll be coming back to make the recommendation. I just want to thank Nancy because she really organized this very well for us to have a really tight meeting, and not too many changes, if any, I think, but good conversation mm-hmm. on a couple of issues. And then last Thursday was Team 21, and we spent, again, part of the discussion around our LMCs and how we're, even based on Hadley's remodeling, you know, using this as more of a hub of the school, more interaction, much less a traditional library where you're being shushed, and that all the teachers, you know, all of them, from like newer teachers in the district all the way up to what I would call more veteran teachers, really talked about the how important it is to try and build that into all of our schools. So there was some discussion around kind of creativity around it. If you could do some minimal renovation, what would it be? And we broke into subgroups to do that. So that was a good conversation. And the other one is just, again, following up on teachers doing a teacher-led learning so that the Team 21 teachers are going to be the kind of the pilot for that to get into the classrooms and do some modeling around collaborative learning with each other. So I'll report back on that, but it was a good conversation.
Anybody else?
Sure. Let me report on the Executive Council for PCA I sent in this morning. I think Lori covered just about everything in her president's report, but I'd just like to add there were quite a few people who spoke in favor of replacing the Churchill portables that are there with more new classrooms. So I heard that this morning as well, again tonight. And there were two of Fellapalooza, a number of our students and staff were involved with that February 27th. And then the candidate forum that the PCA Council is working on in collaboration with the League of Women Voters for the slate of people running for the Open Season Award, and that will take place March 14th. As well, that day, our candidate forums of the other neighboring districts, so it's nice to be in that group.
Finance.
We talked a lot about the Churchill addition, which kind of we also talked about at the full board. So the other meeting that I attended was the MEP meeting, which is the foundation meeting. That was actually Wednesday night. Same time as the listening sessions, so we normally come into the listening sessions. The foundation was, we talked about kind of what the theme would be this year for grants for the for D41, and kind of what that theme would be, and kind of tie that in with. Yeah, the check the box program for the registration piece. So I've already talked to Erica about that, and it's kind of in process for the upcoming school.
Terrific. Anyone else? No? Okay. Upcoming meetings, February 23rd, 2015, regular board meeting at 7:30 p.m. at Hadley Junior High. Still going to do it here at Hadley?
Yes.
March 9th, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. at Central Services Office. Other matters, are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time?
Just one quick thing, and this is certainly for the board because it's our spring IASB dinner, but it also impacts people who are running for the board, which we have some folks in the audience here. And I know, Nancy, you'll probably get this out to the candidates, but on March 12th, IASB holds their spring dinner, and it also has what they call a pre-meeting, which is a briefing for candidates. So if people are interested, did you get that? Good. Because I wanted to make sure the spring meeting is typically, I think, a really good one because we have that briefing, but it also lays the groundwork for like our agenda for next year with IASB. So I'm glad that went out. Great.
Anyone else? Just so you guys know, I talked to Paul about how, in terms of engaging the community through social media, you know, videotaping meetings, things like that. So that'll be something that'll be coming up on the agenda at some point. Just how do we use some of the technology to continue to engage and communicate. Anything else? Okay. The board has determined that there is a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Washington?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate the commitment. Close open session.
Moved.
And second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Nay. Okay.